Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, Charlie Steele. And tonight we're going to attempt to do some reading. I thought of going further, going through the Toltec path again and reading a little more on that book. It's a remarkable book, and I thought I might read from chapter 8. Chapter 8 is called The Steady As You Go. It's kind of a good philosophy. Don Juan, of course, and I'm reading from A Toltec Path by Ken Eaglefeather. And Chapter 8, of course, those of you who aren't familiar with Toltec Path is essentially the Mayan. South American shamanism, and path to spirituality. There's so many strange aspects to so many paths to spiritualism. Almost hard to explain. And I've looked at so many that over the years that we try to understand them. But the Toltec Path is quite unique in itself. That it's if you've read or if you listened to any of our previous programs on it, you'll note that it is a unique thing, a unique path. And I thought this was an interesting chapter. Don Juan says, the purpose of tracking is twofold, to move the focal point steadily and safely, and to imprint its principles at such a deep level that the human inventory is bypassed. As a result, through tracking, you spontaneously cultivate a natural energy field, meaning that you're becoming a person of knowledge. And Toltec teachings are geared, says Kastananda, to doing exactly that. Within the margins of shifting the focal point and imprinting principles, tracking takes on multifaceted approaches that utilize numerous skills. The forms of tracking eventually give way to tapping, and the essence of whatever it is you're tracking. This is the quintessential maneuver of becoming a goal itself. Tracking, therefore, requires total realization, not just understanding. This requirement means observing, following, becoming, and living the energy of your objective. The full realization of tracking skill includes knowing that the technique works, as well as having the ability to make it work. And since you can always find new explanations for practically anything, you don't necessarily have to know why it works. realizing the fullness of tracking beyond its individual skills means you have developed personal fortitude to handle focal point shifts. You also have the strength of character to better understand this constant barrage of forces which pull you from your path. In essence, tracking prevents complacency. As it hinges on stability, it engenders a unique personal relationship with the world. The world, to maintain balance amid the clamor of competing ideas, for instance, it provides guidance for dealing with the world of people. Tracking necessitates learning to be effective, not just willful. In addition, you find that the more you tap the world of will, the less support the world of reason offers, no matter how well constructed. As a result, Toltec guidelines, strategy, and discipline provide a way to leave ordinary human endeavors without sacrificing personal integrity. And the guidelines for tracking. In each facet of Don Juan's teaching, he addresses common themes. Florida Grau refers to these as tracking precepts. If I come to realize them as guidelines that enable you to remain on track through each of the mastery of awareness stages, and they are, there is a superior and guiding force for all creation. This force is true power or spirit. Reality is an interpretation of event. How we organize and view the world stems from a reflection within ourselves. We have more to our nature than we presently use or even suspect. It is our job to develop these capacities for awareness, and by merging ourselves with the wellspring of creation, and thus a driving force within us, we may unveil the deepest levels of our nature. The world is, in essence, mysterious. As part of the world, we too are mysterious. Whatever we figure out about ourselves and the world forever remains a mystery. Otherwise, we continue to reflect ourselves about ourselves. We continue to reflect to ourselves about ourselves. In principles, Don Juan and his team presenting tracking principles to Castaneda from different angles. In The Power of Silence, Don Juan says the first principle of tracking is ruthlessness. In The Eagle's Gift, Grau says the first principle is the rangers choose their battlegrounds. While these may appear different, the bottom line is that you have to be ruthless in order to choose the conditions of your battleground. Battleground can be your place of residence or work, a wilderness, waterhole, or the point where you draw the line and with another's behavior. It's whatever you choose. Other principles, including relaxing and abandoning yourself to your fate and discarding everything in your life that isn't necessary. The final principle, Grau tells Castaneda, hinges on success with the other maneuvers. It consists of not placing yourself at the forefront of a situation. Thus, you rest outside of the circle that presses others. For instance, while healing Grau's leg, a Toltec curer, had another person apply the remedies and teach her how to forge the Toltec path. The curer remained behind the scenes while directing the activity. Thus, he gained a more accurate picture of what was taking place. While Grau thought he was the janitor, he actually choreographed for healing and instruction. Castaneda was introduced to these principles early on in his apprenticeship. He later presented them as specific techniques in his third book, Journey to Ixalan. He even gave them chapter titles. For example, he discovered that death is an advisor, developed ruthlessness. Through using personal history, he learned to cover his tracks. Having a worthy opponent forced him to keep his resources in check. In general, these principles consist of the major tenets of handling yourself. The manner in which they are presented is a subordinate to the actual practice of managing your resources. Thus, we could easily say that the first principle is to develop a natural field. A supportive exercise would be to not expect anything. This would automatically interdict and remold such of our behavior. Rather than continually projecting into the future, we would begin tracking present-centeredness. We would also begin cultivating our core natures. In the process of all of this, we would learn to choose our own battlegrounds. Furthermore, we would also say that the first barrier of perception is loneliness. In dealing with that, we would have to face fear as well as find our unique way in the world. Therefore, by creating another set of principles and practices, we could achieve similar results. Basically, then, Toltec principles provide direction in order to avoid taking the brunt of a situation, to relax and not cling to anything, to peak awareness, and to run your own life. But before any of these can be accomplished, Don Juan also says the first principle of tracking yourself. Without the concerted effort to track down and eliminate your foibles, and to recognize and bolster your strengths, you lose sight of the principal purpose of tracking, which is the pursuit of freedom. Strategy. To enact these principles, Toltecs utilize lessons gained from the transition into the third cycle. Don Juan refers to the Toltecs during the conquest as the unquestionable masters of tracking, leaving antiquated second cycle practices behind. He says that they built a most effective strategy, which consists of six elements, each interacting with the other. The first five elements are control, discipline, forbearance, timing, and will. The sixth element, which Don Juan considers the most important, engages the external world. It is the petty tyrant, a person who wields some measure of control over you. And once again, because this strategy requires a significant expenditure of energy, a significant reduction of self-importance is the key to governing it. Control is steadfastness. This element enables a harmonious containment of energy, characteristic of present-centeredness. It also allows energy to flow freely in whatever direction desired. This dynamic is often measured in terms of a constant inner control. Agitation is contrary to it. Perseverance and independence are its hallmarks. Discipline or vigilance. This element consists of a marked ability to assess and analyze strong and weak points in the environment, in others, and in yourself. It allows you to harness energy and it cultivates strength. The discipline of a ranger is the ability to remain vigilant even under the most stressful conditions. Patience and forbearance. This form of holding back permits you to let go of what of that which belongs to others, claiming only that which belongs to you. And calm endurance marks the commitment to pursue long-range objectives. Timing or exquisite balance. Timing requires you to tune yourself to the rhythms of spirit. In doing so, you automatically balance yourself with yourself, with the environment, and with dimensions beyond the ordinary. I like this in that timing requires you to tune yourself to the rhythms of the spirit. At times, not always, unfortunately, but at times, we are able to enter that exquisite balance. And you connect with the rhythms of the spirit. And you automatically balance yourself, with the environment, with dimensions beyond the ordinary. And I find that to be very real, and that as part of the, not only as part of the strategy of the Toltec path, but it's unique in any path toward spiritual consciousness and spiritual awareness. And, you know, discipline and vigilance is critical. But I find it. Patience and forbearance, man. Patience is so critical, and I feel that I have difficulty constantly with patience and forbearance. I want to read that again because I just wanted to mention this form of holding back permits you to let go of what that which belongs to others. Claiming only that which belongs to you, calm endurance marks the commitment to pursue long-range objectives. The will or pate are personal intent. Success in any endeavor results from the proper accumulation and use of personal energy. The essence of tracking is trimming and shaping your life to the natural currents of spirit by reducing unnecessary expenditures of energy and activating your will results. Petty tyrant, or rigorous practice. Having a petty tyrant ensures that you always have plenty of practice to apply the teachings. And due to its importance, it is presented in more detail in the practices section of this chapter. This strategy offers a program for action. It highlights the essentials of gaining experience, assimilating the results, and practicing to further refine yourself. Traits. Presenting the essentials in each in yet another way. Don Juan says there are four basic moods or traits of tracking: ruthlessness, cunning, sweetness, and patience. These are levels of intent or individual currents of energy, meaning that they are also positions of the focal point. In addition, they provide a four-direction orientation for behavior. Ruthlessness for the west, cunning for the south, sweetness for the east, patience for the south. Combining the balance of them in right measures produces the range state of being. Ruthlessness. Unrestricted determination marks this trait. It is boldness without recklessness, command without arrogance, and a basic premise of the Toltec way. Don Juan says it is a main requirement to unseat self-importance and thus restore one's natural ability to perceive the silent knowledge and immediate knowing without ordinary deliberation of spirit directly. Don Juan adds that the ancient seer unraveled self-importance and found it to be self-pity in disguise. Hence, success hinges on changing your cohesion to the pattern of no pity, a focal point, vocation synonymous with ruthlessness. Without this trait, you leave yourself wide open to others to walk over you. With it, you're more objective, more able to manage your resources, and thus more capable of tracking knowledge. In his teaching of Castaneda, one of Don Juan's unswerving objectives was to get Castaneda to move his focal point. At that time, Castaneda regarded him as eminently rational. Don Juan responded that he only appeared to be so, and his ruthlessness created a disguise of rationality. Through his deception, Castaneda gained enough intellectual security to risk adopting new ways. The main point was getting Castaneda to entrain his energy to Don Juan's. This entertainment required unparalleled consistency on Don Juan's part, and therefore is the reason, he says, that for a Toltec, ruthlessness is not cruelty, but sobriety. Cunning. Cunning involves examining a situation so you may get what you want without warping anyone's energies. Aiming for accuracy, you study the features of the situation and the forces influencing your battleground. You remain prepared and innovative. You need to know where you're headed and what you want to accomplish. And furthermore, cunning involves using the art of deception without being deceitful. Without it, you have to rely on other people's assessments and conclusions. With it, you develop resourcefulness and adaptability. Sweetness. To balance ruthlessness and cunning, you present a likable facade. However, this sweetness often belies having no pity. Without being condescending, you have cold, calculating eyes. Paradoxically, you're also kind, since wisdom without kindness, says Don Juan, is useless. This trait doesn't mean you are constantly dripping with sweetness. In fact, Don Juan advises that it is good to show your claws on occasion. With sweetness, you cultivate a keen sense of humor. You can also let go of your wins and losses and move on to more to your next encounters. Without it, you might lose balance and become obsessed with your goals, perhaps harassing others on your way to achieving them. With it, you gain the ability to laugh at yourself and at the world. Patience is forbearance without laxness. You take only what you need and leave the rest. It also gives you the capacity to listen and wait. Your silence grants access to deeper knowledge. Silent knowledge. It provides balance to keep other traits in check. As a result, spirit moves quietly within and without. Smoothly creating and the circumstances your intent set in motion. Without it, you resurface into self-importance and latch onto superficial desires. And with it, you find peace. Practices. Compared with dreaming, tracking concerns itself with small shifts of the focal point. To the average observer, however, the small shift might seem quite a marvel. To Don Juan, for instance, turning into a crow was a small shift. But before any shift can occur, your first energy field must first be destabilized or suspended. And to do this, you must break your normal continuity of experience. Exercises such as altering routines, gazing and erasing personal history, are therefore the preliminaries for dislodging the focal point. You must then move the focal point. While intent is the force which shifts your cohesion, clarity about your goal serves to reduce random interference during the transition. Intent also solidifies or restabilizes a shift, a non-ordinary worldview, learning tasks and a path with heart will help restabilize the focal point of the non-ordinary locations. I'm going to get back to that in a minute, but I thought it might be interesting to talk about shape shifting. Since I believe I experienced it at one time, not that I shape-shifted, but that I experienced this ability to change into a crow. About probably 20 years ago now, this experience happened to me. And it was very, very unique. I don't know what possessed me to do it to drive down this road. But I was visiting Maine. I'm from Maine, and I was visiting Maine. And one afternoon, I decided to take a ride and go out toward, an old logging road and just kind of walk through the woods and kind of commune with nature a little bit and kind of just walk through the woods and enjoy the afternoon. And so I did, and I got out of the car, and I began to walk down this old logging road. It was very, very nice. It was a beautiful day in the fall. And as I began to walk, I could hear a crow seem to caw, over me, and it seemed to follow me. And almost as though it was warning me not to go any further. He was kind of like, I really didn't pay any attention. I was just kind of like walking toward down the road, down an old road. It was really a beautiful day. And old rutted logging road, And after about 300 or 400 yards, I had walked down that road, and this constant, I was being constantly observed by this crow, all right, and it was constantly warning. And then suddenly I saw other crows, and as I got further down the road, I noticed over to the right a clearing, and in that clearing was a strange thing. They were like many crows there, like maybe four or five, standing around, and there was this bag, and it looked like there might have been a bag of meat or something or other. But as a bait of some sort for something, but the crows used to be everywhere. And they weren't picking at the bag, they were just there, they were congregated in a group, and they were just, I don't know what they were doing, they weren't really doing anything, they were just talking to one another, kind of. And as I walked up to see what it was, suddenly there was a man appeared, and he appeared out of nowhere, just right out of the woods. It was like boom, and it was like really weird. And the guy was some kind of, I don't know what he was. He didn't really say. He just said,
He said, he just appeared. And he said, who are you? I asked him, I remember, who are you? And the guy says, well, I'm just here. He didn't really explain who he was. He just said, I'm here, you know. And I thought that was weird because he looked kind of weird. And I didn't know. And for the guy to be there out in the middle of nowhere with no shelter, no anything, just to be there, almost as though he just appeared there, you know. And I asked him why he was out here by himself. And he turned that question around and said, why are you? And I said, I was just taking a walk, you know. And I said, he says, okay, well, take off, you know. I'm just, he didn't explain anything. And the next thing I know, he went back into the, he just turned around, went back into the woods, and that was the end of it. And then all of a sudden, this very large crow just, you know, came out of the woods and just flew over and perched on top of the limb right over the bag that was hanging, and it was really bizarre, and I didn't see the guy again, and I just kind of just turned around and walked back out to the roadway and started to walk back. As I walked back, I could hear a bird again. I saw this huge, it was almost like a raven, just like almost, it kind of like followed me. It was like on one limb and to another limb, and it was every so often it would go caw caw, you know, it would call, and then other birds would call, and then it would continue, but it continued to follow me almost till I got out of the I turned back around and walked back out. And but the oddity of that was, I never forgot it, because I had read about shape-shifting before, and if there was ever a reason for it or ever a time, I don't know what he was doing, this character, but it seems that he was attracting a lot of crows and speaking to these crows, and he seemed quite at home with the crows. I don't know. And when he appeared, none of the crows moved away. None of them flew away. It was as though he were controlling their minds or controlling them in some way. Usually crows will leave when you walk in, or, you know, they'll fly away or whatever. But none of these, they almost seem to be curious, you know, as to what this man was saying or doing. And they seem to conform to that single thought that he had. I don't know. They were just, he said there were maybe six or seven crows right in that immediate vicinity that were, you know, were there. And I never forgot that. And I never, ever forgot that because of the very strangeness of what the way that appeared and the way he appeared and the way he disappeared. And as I walked, like I said, as I walked out of that clearing and back to the roadway, I was compelled to start thinking about shape shifting, and it was rather a very weird and very unique encounter, one I've never had before in any way like that, where, you know, you felt that the energy shape was shifting before you, like this entity controlled the crows, and, you know, this man crow kind of thing was happening. It was very weird, and that then compelled me to further study, you know, the idea of shape shifting, and I got into the works of Don Juan and Castaneda, and a number of shamanic teachings. And birds, of course, seem to be one of the great tools that are used for the spirit. And I'm just saying this, and I'm talking about this tonight because an experience that I had in the last year was rather fascinating, and it was extremely fascinating actually, in that I was able to experience, have an almost out of body experience, based on a more or less on a friend's experimental machine, if you will, that allows the body to transcend the third dimension into a fourth dimensional state or further on. And because of that machine that I was able to, it was a sound machine, a vibratory machine, I was able to I was able to transform into a bird-like spirit, into a bird-like creature in my mind. As I laid upon this and listened to the sounds and so on, I transformed. I had an out-of-body experience where I was transformed into this bird, which I felt was an eagle, but I couldn't tell exactly what kind of bird I was. All I could tell that I was a bird and that I was a flying spirit, and I flew up over a lake and over a mountaintop and had this grand, all-embracing vision of knowing. And it was a remarkable feeling. And one I would like to repeat again if I had the opportunity. But this machine that I am talking about was invented, and it actually does work and creates this ability for one to transform from his third dimensional reality to a fourth dimensional reality, and then leave the body. Okay, but you can come back. I mean, it's just that you can leave the body. And if you ever wish to grasp the concept of that, if you ever tried, or if you ever perhaps succeeded, then you know what it's like. You know what it's like to fly, you know, above your body, above your reality, into a full-blown new reality, okay, that your own mind has created. It's almost impossible to try to explain the emotional as well as the intellectual and spiritual combination that you experience. And until one has experienced it, it's very unique. And it helps to explain the multidimensional aspects of our existence. And also the multidimensional ability that we have to travel into all kinds of different dimensions and alter altered realities, alternative realities, if you will, that are there for our entertainment, you know, for our experiencing, you know, them. And the power, the incredible power of the mind to be able to transform our physical reality into a spiritual existence is just mind-blowing, you know. But it's real. It's real. It's real as real as ice cream is real, you know. It's real as, you know, trees and plants and whatever. But again, it involves our ability to focus and to be, in this case, I was on a sound kind of transcendental machine that allowed me to reach that level, artificially, if you will, but definitely naturally, but it was mechanically induced. But to be able to do that non-mechanically, which is what, you know, Castaneda and Don Juan are preaching and saying how they achieve it. And you can, I believe, and again, that story that I brought up of the shape-shifting crow and man, it doesn't surprise me that there are many people who can change and shape-shift and so on. And it would be foolish of me not to think that practice was available and that and it existed, because I know that other practices do. So this is just one more method to our world, you know, to adapting to the reality of our world. And well, I could go further on this than I hope to, but I thought it was interesting. It should be interesting to point that out in the experience that I actually had. And there was another moment. There was another interesting moment that occurred probably about 5 years ago, or maybe more than that. 7 or 8 years ago, when I was studying shamanic practices. I actually had a book and I was reading through it and so on. I was reading about hawks and condors and the large birds of prey and how the shaman could change in and into these at will, essentially, and what symbolic symbols they were, what great symbols they were. And as I went out that afternoon, I left and I stopped, and I was driving, and I went to this, I had to stop at this particular place. And as I got out of the car, I can remember this so very well. This incredibly large hawk, must have had a wingspan of, oh, I don't know, 10 or more feet. Okay, it was this huge, and it followed. I could see it following my car. Very weird. I saw it following my car, and then when I pulled off and I stopped, and I went in and I got out of my car to go into this place. I looked up and I saw this hawk circling around me, right? Circling overhead. And there was no reason, there was nothing there, no dead animals or no anything or animal that it would want to eat it, but dive down on, but it was there as a symbol, circling around, maybe, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 feet. Let's say more than that, maybe 40 or 50 feet above my head in this clearing. And I was just stunned looking at it, and it just circled and circled, made a circle around me. And as I walked ahead, it began to walk further, it followed, and it continued this circle and moving around in this huge, sweeping circle. And as I said, it had at least a 10 or more foot wingspan. It was huge. And I had never seen one like that in this area before. I know they do exist, and they're either called turkey hawks or they're hawks. And this was a very large hawk. And but again, I saw it more as a symbol. Perhaps a symbol of that was
compelling me to see it almost as possibly an omen or as a sign of some sort, a sign of understanding. Because it just seems very odd that it was at the time when I had just finished studying about this. I was reading it that afternoon, and his incredible ability to do this thing. And as I left the house and saw this incredibly huge hawk or bird. It was definitely a bird of prey. Fly over me, and for some reason I circle and continue to circle for quite some time, as though it was flagging me down and saying, you know, I'm you. You know, pay attention to this. This is something you need to see or experience. And it wasn't until after that when I started to think. And then I thought about the crow, and I thought about the, the different things. But this one was a real sign of some sort, and it took me a while to understand it. And the oddity was that it was, I don't know, as though it were a shaman spirit guide or some sort, but. It was more than coincidence, you know. And for that eagle or that hawk or whatever to follow me in my car and then to circle around me when I stopped and circle. And maybe, like I said, maybe 30 or 40, no more than that, probably 40, 50, 60 feet or 100 feet above my head. All right, very noticeable. Brought me to an appreciation for that possible ability. But it wasn't until about a year or so ago when I had that experience of transcendence and leaving out-of-body experience and experiencing it as a bird. A bird of prey, like an eagle or a hawk of some sort. And I could see myself flying over this sea, this lake, flying over this top of this mountaintop as a bird. And feeling and seeing and knowing all, and as though the world was totally being encompassed by my vision and by my wingspan, which seemed to keep growing and growing and growing until it encompassed the entire land and sea and lake and whatnot that I was looking at. And until the music stopped. And then when the music stopped, so did my vision stop. And that was unique about that machine. But I left with a remarkable sense of having experienced something out of this world, transcending my normal consciousness, and it probably confirmed to me more than anything else the existence of spirit, the existence of the altered. Reality, the existence of higher reality, the existence of our own diverse existence. That we are human, but we can become anything, bird-like or animal-like or spirit-like or whatever we decide to be. We just have to change our consciousness and focus our consciousness on these areas, and we can become such. Why we would want to turn into an animal or a bird or some sort is beyond me, other than to experience the rush of in
instinctual existence, which itself is fascinating, you know, but to take on that form and to feel it's to feel that very odd sense of existence, but nevertheless knowing all along that you can come back to human existence, knowing all along that you are human, but sensing these things and seeing these things and being aware of them is all part of maturity, spiritual maturity, intellectual maturity, and tolerance to the world at large. And being able to accept new concepts, new ideas, new strategies, if you will, to further enlighten your pathway, you know, further enlighten your soul, further enlighten your search. And, you know, that's all part of it. And that's why I'm bringing this to you tonight, the Toltec Path. And explaining my own odd experiences. We've got about 5 minutes left, but the next segment of this is called Control Folly. In The Power of Silence, Don Juan refers to control folly as a technique within tracking. In the same book, he equates it with tracking, and which means focusing, you know. Regarding the malleability of terminology, he says that calling a tracker a controlled folly maker is too cumbersome. He then tells Castaneda to use any term he wants. In The Eagle's Gift, Castaneda reports that Don Juan refers to trackers as practitioners of controlled folly, and dreamers as practitioners of dreaming. Grau adds his instruction, telling Castaneda that controlled folly consists of applying tracking principles to everything. And the result, she says, are that trackers are never in a hurry, so they don't fret. They don't take things too seriously, and they freely improvise. In other words, they command their behavior, even though they may not understand everything. And it's like I was telling you about this machine, or telling you about this crow and stuff. It's true. Tracking. Perhaps control folly. It's a command of your behavior, even though you may not understand everything. And Don Juan also says that only those who see can control their folly. While seers labor as hard as anyone, they pick and choose the greater influency, because they have more insight regarding the effect of their decision. Moreover, from their seeing, they know that they're in over their heads, and that an indefinable force guides their steps. Consequently, they treat the world as an endless mystery, and what people do as endless folly. And within the human domain, however, those who see can deliberate from their folly, and choosing a direction, they follow as though it mattered beyond all else. And the principal art of controlled folly is not being attached to anything or remaining apart to everything. Now that's extremely confusing to someone not aware, but it's so true. In explaining how you must be aware of your existence, but at the same time allow yourself to abandon that existence
to go beyond that third dimension, to go beyond that existence that you live in, to just by relaxing, just by non-stress, just by meditation, just by concentration. And what can happen is you can actually change shape, change mind, change your place of action, change your surroundings, change everything simply from a thought turned into an action. And that thought is best when it is ruthless, when it is truly selfish, in that you want to pursue it, you have to pursue it, it pursues itself. So, and therefore, the ruthlessness, if you will, is in that obsession that it pursues itself to bring you to a higher consciousness, a higher enlightenment, a higher level of experience. And that in itself is part of the Toltec path, but also part of the path that I've experienced and my own life. And it's now 8:59 and about time to go. We got 46 seconds left. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight and appreciate it, and hope you have a great time. Tomorrow night we'll be joined by George Dixon and Lila, and we'll be talking about perhaps the Mayan calendar and events leading to 2012. And I thank you, and good night.